In the morning, Gitmo Nation, thank you for joining us on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. My name is Sir Craig Jones, and I am joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy.
How are you doing today?
Slightly buzzed.
You know, I am getting that impression. I have really gotten that impression. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with a drunk. Just to let you know. Chemslave, why don't you tell the audience what you've been drinking?
Right now?
Yeah.
I'm drinking a Jolly Scott. It's made by the Appalachian Brewing Company. Great beer.
Awesome. Awesome. But what else were you drinking?
Oh. I was also drinking some tequila.
Tequila. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why he is buzzed. So if he starts to giggle, if he starts to slur his words like me, if he starts to do any of that stuff, you know why.
Hey, I'm not that bad.
Not yet. You're not as bad as me. All right, let's get started. So, Chemslave, we've had an interesting week in terms of the debt talks, what Adam Curry likes to call the American Idol show. I am increasingly starting to think that this might not be the first that everybody thought it was going to be. This is starting to become fascinating. It is really intriguing to see these people bickering among themselves just to try to get a few extra things in their legislation. The problem is that even bastions of elitist old media, like the Associated Press, are starting to get a little bit queasy about this. The Associated Press has this amazing article. It's an analysis piece called Debt Mess Shows Washington's Awful Side. It's written by the White House correspondent for the Associated Press, Ben Feather. And this is really a breathtaking article, Chemslave. What this is saying Washington is terrible. This is the worst of Washington. It is disgusting to the American people. They're not really doing anything for us. I mean, it is breathtaking in that it doesn't just single out the Republicans, as is usually the case. They hit Obama and his Democrat cronies just as much. So that is really interesting. There is some really good clips in here. Like, they quote the new Democrat senator from West Virginia, a man named Joe Manchin, as saying, quote, "I can only imagine the anger and disgust they being the American people, have at witnessing a broken government and a president and members of Congress who can't seem to even agree sometimes on what day it is, let alone to solve the nation's debt crisis."
What, they can't even agree on what day it is?
You know, that's a little bit of hyperbole, but quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if these people were arguing about whether it was Thursday or Friday. I know John Boehner was having issues getting one of his deals passed that he needed to extend discussions for a day so he could get the votes necessary to pass his plan for debt reduction, which the Senate subsequently killed. And by the way, John Boehner then repaid the favor by killing a Senate plan to minimize the debt and raise the debt ceiling. But now everybody's saying that Obama should go back into the talks, and Obama doesn't want to because they believe that the Republicans will never support anything Obama recommends. So it's really up in the air what's going to happen. Now, John Boehner and the minority leader in the Senate, Republican by the name of Mitch McConnell, they claim that they are close to a compromise with the president, but the majority leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, has come out and said, no, that's not true. We are not close to a compromise. So it is, I don't know. I still almost expect there to be some sort of compromise to raise the debt ceiling. But there is something going on here, and it is more than what we've been led to believe. I don't think this is just showmanship to get political points. I no longer think this is just a rigged little thing, an American Idol type show. There is something else going on here. I think there really might be a deeply personal war going on between the Speaker of the House and the President of the United States. And at the end of the day, if the plan that gets passed by Congress, and like I said, I do expect there to be a plan, if it is very much like the plan that John Boehner put forth, that might really hurt Obama. And that is, if you listen to the talk radio people, like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, listening to them, you would think that John Boehner and Barack Obama are the same person. They're not happy with any of this. So that may or may not be a good thing. I don't know. That's for the people to decide. That's for the slaves to decide. But this is really something that we should keep an eye on. I know John and Adam are keeping an eye on this, but I think everybody else should as well.
Starting to remind me of something.
Yeah, hold on to that thought. It would be fascinating to see this in a few days, see what happens. I can't wait. Because I'm kind of 50-50 now about whether we will go into default. I didn't think that would happen. And I don't think Obama has the balls to unilaterally do it. Because he opens himself up to impeachment. And I think there would be a huge percentage of the House Republicans that would impeach him for that. So, I don't know. What were you going to say, Kemslave?
This is starting to remind me of that one video that was it reached meme status about those two babies like arguing with each other.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really, two babies being like, nya-nya-nya, and then one would raise his foot and stomp it down.
Nice. Wow. I wish I'd known about that. We could have played that during the show. But that is kind of the image that the AP at least thinks that America is getting. Now, I am dubious because the Associated Press is, I said this a few shows ago, but the Associated Press is possibly the worst media organization on the planet. They are the elitist pricks at the top of the elitist prick food chain. I mean, these people are just the be-all and end-all of elitist pricks. But they run this populist story about how terrible Washington is on both sides of the aisle. I am really, really dubious of this. So, there is something going on. There is something going on between Obama and Boehner, and there is something going on between the press and Washington. I don't think we know exactly what all is going on yet, but I think in the next few days that will become clear. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts, Kemslave?
Okay, I'm looking at the AP website. They have an Espanol. All links.
Okay.
Well, that's freaking me out.
Why is that freaking you out?
Because every time I call some technical support, the first thing I hear is "Habla español."
Yeah, that is annoying. I'll grant you that. That is highly annoying. All right, then let's move on because there's not much we can say about this now. In a few days, this will be a fascinating retrospective. But let's move on because we have some really interesting news out of Libya. Now, Kemslave, this was mentioned on No Agenda, noagendashow.com, to donate. But let's just briefly mention this again. Britain expelled Gaddafi's Libya ambassadors and recognized the the Transitional National Council as the legitimate government of Libya. And now, who are the Transitional National Council, Kemslave? Who are those people? They are the rebels, who we have no freaking idea who these people are. They are a mix of former Gaddafi cronies, not the best people on the face of the planet, and a mix of Al-Qaeda and just oppressed, beaten down, uneducated, undisciplined Libyan kids.
That's the who good these
guys. People, that's right. That's who these people are. And the United Kingdom supports these people over Gaddafi. But the next day after they did that on, I believe that might have been Wednesday or Thursday, but the day after, a high-ranking general was assassinated in Libya. This was a rebel general, and he was assassinated by what are believed to be rebel soldiers. This general was under house arrest for supposedly providing the Gaddafi regime information about the rebels' movements. But this is interesting, because then he suddenly, he goes into house arrest, and then the day after, he's killed. This is starting to look like the rebels are breaking up. They have no unifying force. They have no idea who these people are, except for the fact that they supposedly want Gaddafi out. I think the West, France, Britain, Germany, and America are getting a little bit fed up with this continuing stalemate in Libya and starting to pull back their support. And now the rebels are saying, oh, shit. What do we do now? And they don't know what to do. So they're starting to turn on each other. This is a hellhole in the making. Well, Libya was already a hellhole. No offense to those producers that might be in Libya. I don't think there are any. But in case there are, I'm sorry. But this is really going to become a hellhole if the rebel forces just collapse. And it looks like that might be happening. What do you think, Kemslave?
Well, it's just leading it, like another example why countries like the United States shouldn't be messing around with the politics of other countries. Like Iraq, we went in there, we got rid of Saddam, things went to hell. It's like Afghanistan, things went to hell. Libya, things went to hell. Hopefully they don't start going into European countries, because then things will go to hell again.
Kemslave, I don't need to tell you this, because you're very well aware of the state of European countries. You come from European ancestry. But America has totally, totally taken over Western and now Eastern Europe. We have bases all over the place. Poland. We have hundreds of thousands of troops permanently stationed all over Western and Eastern Europe. We have already overthrown regimes in Europe, installed friendly regimes. That's a done deal. The book is closed. We are the masters of Europe. And anybody who chooses to look at it any other way is just not facing reality. Kemslave?
Yes.
You were very quiet. Have I offended you?
No, I was just staring at the screen in a drunken stupor.
All right, this is what happens when Kemslave has too many chemicals in his system. All right, let's go away from this story. I think John and Adam might have some interesting takes on this. I know Adam loves to talk about Libya. So we might be hearing about this assassination tomorrow. Let's see. Every time I've said that, I've been wrong. So let's see. Let's see if I'm finally right.
I'm not following your advice if I ever go gambling.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. It's funny you should say that. I personally have fantastic luck. When I play card games, when I play poker, when I gamble personally, I have pretty good luck. But when it comes to predicting for other people, I'm like lobotomized or cursed or something. It's like I've sold my soul to the devil. I have absolutely no luck whatsoever when it comes to predicting other people's outcomes. So I don't know what the hell that is, but you know, whatever. I digress. Now, Kemsley, if we had a thing, a meme, a show-and-tell kind of theater pony show in the mid-1990s into the early 2000s about how bad video games are for kids. Do you recall that?
Well, as I grew up during those times, yes, I recall it perfectly.
Yes, I think many people, even if they were not growing up at those times, I think most of the people in this audience will recall that. Because who was the leading proponent of a strong regulation of video games, Kemslave? Who was that?
I know of two people, Joe Lieberman and Lucifer Clinton.
Absolutely. You know, I forgot about Lieberman, but yeah. You know, that's one of the reasons why I don't like him. People on the conservative side, and full disclosure, I am a little bit more conservative than I am libertarian, but I'm a strong mixture of both. But people on the conservative side love to hold up Joe Lieberman as this paragon of virtue. He might be kind of wacky on social issues, but he's a good guy. He's a guy you want holding your back, and he might be a nice man. I don't know. I don't think he is. I think he's probably a douchebag like most of these people. But he demagogued the video game debate like nobody else, except for Lucifer Clinton. She was terrible when she was first lady, and when she was beginning her senatorial career, she was just terrible at this. Now, this has been a meme, that video games are bad for kids. It used to be, the idea was, if you shoot somebody in the face in a video game, that means you're very likely to shoot somebody in the face in real life. Now, keep in mind, the statistics never showed that. There was never a single case where any kid or young adult committed a violent act and was traced to a video game. Never once happened.
Wait, isn't that the story about that Anders guy in Norway that he played video games, like Call of Duty or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. Now, see, this is, you know, you just picked up on a big, big meme. I had forgotten about that, but absolutely. But let me keep going, laying the groundwork. Because Grand Theft Auto was a big example of this. You would go around hijacking people's cars, you know, hitting people over the head with crowbars, you know, things like that. And people like Hillary Clinton and Joe Lieberman, who, by the way, don't you think Joe Lieberman looks like a skull? His face looks like a skull? I've always thought that his face looks like it's like a skeleton face. You can see how, if he lost some weight, he would look like the Walking Death. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, sort of reminds me of, like, the whole skull face. Sort of reminds me, like, Rand Paul also has, like, a similar weird face structure like that.
He's definitely goofy-looking. You mean Ron Paul or Rand Paul?
Rand Paul.
His son.
Yes.
You see, I think the old man looks goofier than he does.
Yeah, they both look goofy.
They both
bad,
look goofy.
Bad genes.
By the way, Ron Paul, fantastic. Not so hot on him in terms of foreign policy, but domestic policy, he's fantastic. Anyway, I digress. We both must be drunk or something. We can't seem to stay on topic. Anyway, in the mid-1990s, you had this video game meme that video games were terrible. Just terrible. So, what are we to do? We are to create stories that back that up. Now, you always had, in the 90s and 2000s, about some wacko kid, you know, beating up his girlfriend or his parents or something, and he might have had a Grand Theft Auto game in his bedroom. Oh my god. We know what did it. We know what pushed him over the edge. It was Grand Theft Auto. And other games like that. They're Postal 2, you know, things like that. So that's a consistent meme. But now, Now they're getting intelligent. That the violence meme is kind of fading a little bit. People are not paying much attention to it. But it's still being introduced, like with that Anders Previk in Norway. Absolutely, you were right to mention that. He did supposedly play Call of Duty, and that's what people were trying to make him out to be. Like, he had his worldview warped by that game. Again, that's totally incorrect. I mean, nobody would shoot a living person because of a video game. But now, because people realize that it's bullshit, they've changed. They've changed the meme. Now, instead of parents being afraid that their kids are going to kill them, now parents need to be afraid that video games will kill their kids. Now, isn't that genius?
Oh, it's perfect.
It's absolutely perfect. Instead of the threat that the kid is going to kill somebody, just say that the video game is going to kill the kid. And then you stop them playing at all. You kill the problem, no pun intended. You kill the problem, like, right at the beginning. Just don't have the kid play a game. Now, this is from the Agence France-Presse. The French press agency. Wonderful, wonderful people. Just a millimeter below the AP in terms of douchebaggery. They have this beautiful story, as reported on Yahoo News, called Xbox Addict Dies from Blood Clot. Now, first of all, we have two memes. By the way, for those of you in the audience, I just held up three fingers when I said two memes.
Nice.
So, there is something deeply wrong with both of the hosts of the show today. Something very deeply wrong. There always is, but it's worse today. Anyway, there are two memes in that title. Xbox Addict, dies from blood clot, dies from blood clot. How the hell are you addicted to Xbox? I ask you. Now, you would think if this was a properly written and sourced article, there would be an answer to that someplace, but there isn't. There is no answer to that. This kid, a 20-year-old named Chris Staniforth in England, played the Xbox quite frequently. It was a passion of his. But they never once... As a matter of fact, I don't think they used the word addicted again. At least not in connection with him. No, I don't believe they do. This kid just, you know, liked to play video games, and supposedly he had just gotten done playing a big round of a tournament with some friends, and he has a blood clot and dies. And because of that, they blamed that blood clot on him sitting all the time, playing video games, hence, video games kill kids.
See, I've already have something against this.
Okay. Well, I would hope so.
Other than this whole thing.
Okay.
Well, he wants to offer to place a study game design at a university.
That's right.
Are we going to have another story? Learning addict dies from blood clot, because I know I've spent countless hours studying about things like chemistry for like hours at a time at school, like in the library.
Absolutely. And I'm in the same boat.
Learning kill me.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I'm a history and English major. We'll be graduating in a few months. And both of those degrees could easily kill you, according to this article. All three of our degrees, chemistry, English, and history, could kill us in a microsecond compared to playing video games. Those are among the most ass-heavy fields of study you can go into. But you're absolutely right. Not only studying, but just think, sleeping. How often do you sit down to sleep? I mean, you're in the same position for hours. Or driving in a car. Or, all that stuff. It's, I mean, Blood clots are common. My father almost died from a blood clot in the mid-1990s. And he thinks he got it from being crammed into a car. But at the, you know, so these are relatively common things. But you can't just blame it on an Xbox, for Christ's sake. If that kid wasn't playing an Xbox, quite frankly, I'm sure he would have been doing something else that involved sitting down for long periods of time, like talking on the internet with friends, watching movies online, you know, something internet-related. This doesn't strike me as a kid who would have automatically gone out to kick a ball outside. So, you know, this meme of having to get moving, unless I start to see, overweight kids and overweight people, like, dropping dead in the street all of a sudden, I'm not buying this. Because everybody gets blood clots. My father, for instance, was in fantastic shape. And he still is for his age, actually. Golfed a lot, walked a lot, just, you know, fantastic shape, and he still got a blood clot. You know, shit happens. Life happens. And unfortunately for this kid, life really, really did happen to him, and finally happened to him at the age of 20, which is a tragedy. And I feel very terrible for him and his family. But don't blame the Xbox. That is a disgrace to his memory, and it's a disgrace to all the other people who have died from blood clots. It cheapens the disease, and it cheapens the whole argument against moving. Getting up, moving around, you know, taking care of yourself. Because there's no doubt people should, you know, live a healthy lifestyle. Nobody says otherwise. But you can't say that a computer screen or an Xbox can kill you.
Because it'd be fun to say Bill Gates killed French or British kid.
Well, unfortunately, you can't say that because the Xbox was introduced around the time that Gates left day-to-day operations in Microsoft. But, you know, that would be a cool headline, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. That would be like saying Steve Jobs killed a teen who was texting on an iPhone in a car. You know, it's just the ridiculousness of... I don't know, this really gets me fired up. I've always hated stories like this. Do you have anything else to add, Chemslave?
Actually, while looking for stories to talk about today, I opened up Polish newspaper printed in United States in New York.
Okay.
Called Nowy Dziennik, and they have an article about how people are addicted to smartphones. Well, oh my God, they actually want to know what's going on in the world.
Excuse me. You know, Chemslave, let me ask you about that. You see, I am always leaving my iPhone someplace, and you know me better than anybody who likes technology the way I do. And you know how I am about technology. I love it. I love technology. I love my iPhone. I have problems with it, but overall I love it. But I am leaving it all over the place, and sometimes it takes me a few minutes or a few hours even to realize I don't have it. Now, thankfully, I've never actually lost it. But that's beside the point. I'm always leaving it someplace, and... I don't feel addicted to it. And I don't feel addicted to the internet at all, which was another meme that was released this week. There was some bogus bullshit story that a study found that people who were disconnected from the internet for a day claimed it felt like withdrawal from smoking. Stupid studies like that. This is all a part of a greater meme of anti-technology. It's frustrating. So what did that story say specifically?
Well, people are like opening up their phones, checking in every less than 30 seconds. It's like trying to put up a hysteria about like people are, like, don't use a smartphone because you're going to be like checking it every 10 seconds. You want to know what's going on. You want to know, like, if someone messaged you. It's like, it's just really just fear-mongering other than anything else.
Yeah, like, you have an iPhone 4 just like me.
Yes.
And I know for a fact you like the device quite a lot. You were very happy when you got it. But do you act like that? Are you always constantly checking it every 10 seconds?
I normally have it in my pocket. I'm listening to an audiobook at work. That's pretty much the extent of me checking it. It's maybe pausing it when I need to do something else.
And you're not even using the phone functionality. You're just using it as an iPod.
I sometimes text someone at work, but that's about it.
Yeah, occasionally. I mean, it's a phone, so you got to use the phone aspect at some point. But yeah, you know, exactly. That's how most people are. The public's going to wake up one day and realize that they have been sold a bill of goods. And I just hope that day comes very soon. Because technology isn't going away. It's just not. And these stories, paid for by God knows who, saying that they're bad for you, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, will go away completely. They need to. They absolutely need to. All right, ChemSlave, what else do we have?
Well, I have an update on those Georgia girls that had a lemonade stand and the police told them to stop.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I recall that. That was like 3 shows ago.
I think it was last show, actually.
Was it just that show? No,
yeah,
it wasn't. Was it?
So.
Really? Yeah, we gotta keep track of this. We gotta have like a web page or something. Audience, stay tuned for that. But ChemSlave, remind me, because I thought it was a while ago. So what was this about again?
Well, 3 girls set up a lemonade stand. Quintessential symbol of the American dream. Having your own little business.
Just getting by.
For them, it looks like it. last week, the girls had a little lemonade stand, and the police came in. It's like, hey, what the hell are you doing? Stop. You need to have a license. You have to have, like, a permit to do this. And so the girls took tail and stopped. And it seems like actually the police were actually yelling at them, like from this new article I'm reading. Where it's like, girls, this is your last warning, and I'm not going to tell you again. You cannot have that lemonade stand. Really douchey police officer.
Yep. All right, so what does this new article tell you?
Well, the owner of the water park that they were saving up money to go to is allowing them to come in for free. And they're going to actually build like a little lemonade stand for them so they could some money at the park for 2 hours. And then they can go free and do whatever they want.
You see, that's really nice. But did you see where this park is?
No, I did not.
Jekyll Island. Do you know what Jekyll Island is?
It rings a bell, I just don't know why.
Jekyll Island is the place where in the early part of the 20th century, like 1910, I guess it was, there was a secret meeting with the banking elites and government elites in the United States, where they planned, in secret, the foundations of the Federal Reserve. Later on to be passed in the Congress as an act. I believe the Federal Reserve came into being in the 19-teens. So I thought that was... I'm not saying that there's any connection, but Jekyll Island has a history. I just thought it was interesting that was the setting for this story.
These girls are pretty nice, too. They're like 10% of their profits. They're going to be donating to Liberty Humane Shelter, some animal shelter.
That is nice. Yeah, I mean, this is nice, wholesome, little experience earning activities that all kids should be doing. And this is beautiful. This is the American dream, being able to go out there, earn some pocket money, and have fun, but learn a little bit about life as well. Learn how to get money, how the capitalist system in this country works,
and how hard it is to actually get money.
Yeah, nowadays, with all these freaking regulations and permits and nickel and diming you this way and that way, I mean, it's bullshit. It is bullshit. This story was endemic of what everything that is wrong with America today. This is antithetical to what our founding ideals were. This is antithetical to what the ideals of our parents were and their parents. This is tragic. But the good thing is that this is becoming less popular. This idea of permit for this, permit for that, permit to breathe, permit to take a shit. I mean, this is not as popular as it once was. I think possibly the tide might be turning against this, but we need to see. As with all of this stuff, this is going to be a wait-and-see type thing. America, this is for really another show, but America, as I see it, stands on the precipice. It can either, maintain its freedoms and really earn the idea of it being the greatest country in the world, or they can keep going down the path that we're going down, and we can become the next China, or the next France, or Russia. And this is the perfect example of that.
Well, it looks like it's turning into a police state, but the girls, they're, like, afraid to actually leave a house. They're, like, they're fearing the police are going to get in trouble with the police. And this is, like, from reading the article, this is not the first time crap like this has actually happened. So there's an organization called the Freedom Center of Missouri who are actually setting up, like, a database, like, with examples of stuff like this happening. So this is not just occurring once. This is an ongoing problem where the police are just cracking down on kids making money.
And it's terrible. It is terrible. All right, so what else do we have?
Well, going on the fruity little segment that I've been doing, it seems that our juice is not as orangey as we think it is.
Oh, dear. What's that about?
Well, the 100% orange juice is actually 100% artificially flavored.
And that, ChemSlave, was the most depressing article I have ever read in my life. I love orange juice.
I think many people do, Craig.
If orange juice was blood, I would be the biggest vampire on the planet. It is amazing. And when I read that, first of all, it made sense to me. If you look at freshly squeezed orange juice, like if you watch somebody actually squeeze it and then give it to you, and you look at the commercial orange juice, one is clear and a deep orangish color. Almost like orangeade. And another is yellow, and a yellowish kind of whitey, milky type of look. And that is the commercial orange juice for Minute Maid, Florida's Natural, and others. And when you think about it, no orange juice looks like that freshly squeezed. So obviously they do something.
Okay, so want to know what they do?
I want to know what they do.
They take the orange juice, like whatever they squeeze out.
All right.
And then they put it in a container, and they remove the oxygen out of it, which not only removes the oxygen, it also removes any of the organic compounds that give flavor to the juice. So they do this so they can actually store the orange juice for around a year. So then they get a companies like those that make perfumes for Dior, and they create flavor packs to make the juice tastes like juice.
Perfect. That's just what I want to know. I am drinking perfume. That is, minus the alcohol. If you exchange the alcohol for sugar, I am drinking perfume. Isn't that a fantastic thought?
So, there's like, quoting from like parts of the article, they're like, they actually like the Minute Maid, which is owned by Coca-Cola, they have, they make it taste like candy, like orange flavor. And some companies actually just request to have the flavors mimic other competitors, so you can just, they all taste the same.
Yeah, if you buy Florida's Natural, which is what I like, that's the one with the tapered neck and the green screw top. And if you then drink, I'm forgetting now. I think it's Minute Maid. It's the exact same thing. But Tropicana is different. It's not as milky looking. It's a little bit, darker, a little bit thinner. There are all sorts of varieties, but this article makes nothing but sense to me. This really, it makes a lot of sense. It's depressing as well. but you know what? It's not going to stop me from drinking it. I still love me some orange juice. And, yeah, it's just something to keep in mind. But I'm not one of these people that is afraid to have artificial this or artificial that. Now, there are some things that I'm a little bit afraid of. Like, the producers of No Agenda will know about the aspartame issue. I think that's probably not the greatest substance on the planet.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't be drinking this Diet Coke that I have, or Diet Pepsi I have squirreled away right behind me.
Yeah, I just tossed out a Coke Zero. God knows what the hell's in that. It used to be, they used to put aspartame in all that, right? That was the sweetener. But now they
still do. Like, or well, at least not
well, you might, that Diet Pepsi might. But I know Pepsi One, which is like a different kind of Diet Pepsi, and Coke Zero. They both use Splenda, which, by the way, is also highly refined, probably terrible for you as well. But supposedly that's derived from real sugar. I don't buy that for a second. It might be like initially derived from it, but that's as highly processed as you can get. This is all terrible for you.
Pretty much anything, I'm a studied chemistry, anything that I even I can't pronounce, being taught all the little secret ways of how to pronounce all these technically sounding chemicals, it's like, yeah, if I can't pronounce it, I probably shouldn't be drinking it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know what, Chemslave, we are kind of getting to the end of the show, and for those that like our show and pay attention, you know what that means. We talk about technology. Now, I had promised last week not to talk about Apple. And I am going to, for the most part, keep that promise. Now, I've already broken that because we mentioned the iPhones and that story about technology a little bit ago, about the addicting aspect of technology. But the main tech article is not about Apple. As a matter of fact, it is about what used to be its arch nemesis, Microsoft. Now, Chemslave, I don't know if you saw this week, but Microsoft, last week, Microsoft released sales figures for the whole year. They kind of do their quarterly reports a little bit strange. And this, last week was the end of their fourth quarter, so they also reported earnings for the whole year. And in those earnings, it was just, it was discovered that Microsoft lost $2.5 billion in the online services division of Microsoft. Now, $2.5 billion is a lot of money. It's money that Microsoft can eat up and still make a lot of revenue, a lot of profit, but it's still a lot of money. So, the big part of online services is search. That is the biggest percentage of that. And Bing is not doing well. Not financially. So, the technorati were starting to think, well, should Microsoft sell Bing? And there was an instant pushback from the Microsofties and the tech community, led, I would argue, by a just wonderful human being named Paul Theriot.
Oh, boy.
Just a beautiful, beautiful man. He is just fantastic. If you want to get the straight story with absolutely no spin, no sarcasm, no slant whatsoever, just go to him. Because he's got it. Not really. Paul Theriot is like the Microsoft hack. It's funny, he does a show on another network called Windows Weekly. And he sounds so rational, so fair when he talks about Apple and other competing companies. But then when he writes for his website, which shall go nameless, you can check the No Agenda News Network for Sir Craig's newsfeed to find a link to this. But when he writes on his website, he is just terrible. He is so slanted, so biased. He writes as an asshole would write. This man is an asshole. I just wanted to get that out. But in his article about this, he points out some fairly lucid things at the beginning. He points out that Microsoft's search makes up 27% of online search when you take in both Bing itself and Yahoo search in the United States, which is powered by Bing. So 27% of the U.S. market is nothing to sneeze at. That is a huge, huge chunk. Unfortunately, they're not getting the advertising revenue that Google would be in that case, so that's why Microsoft is still hemorrhaging money. But he makes the point that online services is an investment. It is a hedge against the future being online services. The future is the cloud, the future is search, and Microsoft has to have a stake in that game. So his argument is that it would be terrible for Microsoft to sell Bing because this is the future. Microsoft has to have its foot in the door. They have to have a viable alternative to Google, and at 30%, or 27%, they have that viable alternative. What do you think? Do you agree with him? Do you disagree with him? What do you think?
Well, I love the cloud. I was a stupid idiot, and I bought a full year subscription to Dropbox just so I can have all my like MP3s up in the cloud. So if my trusty laptop ever dies, which sometimes it makes sounds like it's getting ready to do, I can actually just have like a backup somewhere, so I don't have to worry about oh my god, I lost like 40 gigs of music. It's all up there. I just have to download it.
All right.
I love the cloud, so I agree that they should keep at least 1 foot in the cloud space. So,
well, they have other cloud services like the Windows Live suite of services that could go on without Bing. So, what do you think about Bing itself? Do you use Bing at all?
Never. I sometimes look for their nice background that they have on their site when you go onto Bing.com, but that's about it.
I don't even do that. I have never in my life purposely typed in www.bing.com. Never in my life. And I don't think I'm ever going to. But at the same time, I do agree with Theriot that it's important for Microsoft to have a horse in the race. And any competition that Google gets is good for the market. Now, that being said, I've heard, I don't use it myself, so I can't really say, but I have heard that Bing still doesn't get the results that Google does. So, you have the quality issue. But then Theriot kind of goes off the deep end in his article, and towards the end, he throws in Apple. Now, being the Microsoftie that he is, He points out that Apple has less than 10% of market share for PCs in the United States. He says it's around 5%. Now, he always picks the lowest metric possible, and he is including every single device with a desktop operating system installed. He's not talking about consumers. He's not even talking about, sold computers in a year. He's talking about pure market share. And so, yeah, they're around 5%. And he points out that nobody considers that anything but a huge success. So he compares that hardware to a software entry. And it's just not the same thing. It's apples and oranges. So this is an example of his bias, in my opinion. I'm an Apple fanboy. I will admit that up front. So I need to have that known. But I still find that highly annoying.
At least he does show that, hey, they only have this much market share, and everyone is like being happy that, oh, it's a rousing success, and then, oh, Bing, they only have 27, what the fuck, they suck.
Well, but he said that really ironically. He wasn't like extending an olive branch to Apple. That was a highly ironic statement. He was pointing out, like, in his mind, a logical fallacy, and saying that Bing was not successful. And I think that they are so different, the topics are so different, that it is inappropriate to compare the two. And by the way, he is using the smallest possible metric imaginable to represent the Mac market share. So, all right. That's my take on that. So, do you have anything else to say, ChemSlave?
Not really.
Nope.
My stories have dried up.
As have mine. All right, then. So, thank you very much for listening to us. And in the next few weeks, we are going to be making some additions to the show. Creating an actual name. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Having an actual name for the show. Maybe an intro and an outro. Little track to, you know, liven things up a little bit. Maybe some email addresses and a website to keep track of the stories and have some engagement with the listeners. This is what I like to call an extended beta stage. So bear with us. And I hope you keep tuning in. I know I love doing this. I know ChemSlave does as well. Don't you, ChemSlave?
Yep, as long as we don't stay in beta like Google does for years on end.
No, I think in the next few months we can iron out some of the kinks. And I hope you'll stay with us. Thank you very much. If you enjoyed this podcast, if you enjoy the stream, or if you enjoy No Agenda Show, please donate to John and Adam. They really need your money, especially during the Hot Pockets tour where gas is ungodly expensive. They really need your help. So go to Dvorak.org/NA, go to NoAgendaNation.com, or go to NoAgendaShow.com for links and instructions on how to donate. Please donate. They need it. All right. Thank you, ChemSlave.
Yep.
And thank you for listening, and we shall be back next week. See ya.